Welcome back, baseball fans, to episode 62 of the Nats GM Show, sponsored by NoHalftime.com. The Nats GM Show is the only podcast available via the Nats GM Radio Network. I'm your host, Ryan Sullivan, editor-in-chief of NatsGM.com and the Baron of All Baseball Podcasts. As I mentioned, we are now sponsored by NoHalftime.com. What is NoHalftime.com? Well, you're staring your weekly fantasy opponent and thinking to yourself, I would love to challenge just one of his players, not his entire team. But your fantasy sports service doesn't allow you to. Now you can with the all-new NoHalftime app. The NoHalftime app allows you to create individual challenges using players or teams. For example, you can pit Bryce Harper against Mike Trout, Miguel Cabrera against D. Gordon, or Chris Davis versus Matt Kemp. Creating a challenge takes seconds, and accepting challenges is even easier. NoHalftime challenges can be private or public, and created for Major League Baseball, the NFL, NBA, NHL, PGA, and other sports. Join today and get started. Real money and fantasy supremacy awaits you. And now you can also try NoHalftime for free with $0 challenges. Visit NoHalftime.com for more information and to download the NoHalftime app for your iPhone or Android service. Receive a bonus by entering the promo code NATSGM at sign up. Receive a free t-shirt when you make a deposit. NoHalftime, where the fantasy sports season never takes a break. I'm really interested with this new app, and I'm very excited to have NoHalftime as a sponsor to this show for the entire baseball season. So I want to thank them, and I want to mention that I have Bruce Elliott, one of the founders of NoHalftime, on later in the show to just talk a little bit about the product and talk about the partnership we're going to have going on this season. Now, without further ado, let's get the show started.
This is Tucker Blair of Baseball Prospectus, and you are listening to the Nats GM Show.
Welcome to the podcast, an author for 2080baseball.com, the host of the podcast The Scale with CJ Whitman, and the only former candidate for President of the United States to ever appear on this podcast, Mauricio Rubio Jr. Mal, welcome to the Nats GM Show.
Thanks. I think it's contractually obligated to mention my presidential race in every single appearance I do now, so I just want to say I'm really happy it's over, because the mentions have gone down quite considerably.
It was great just seeing you getting blown up on Twitter with people actually thinking you were a Marco Rubio.
I didn't really get it. Like, people would send me direct messages with campaign advice, and I'd be like, I'm not him, right? Like, I'm not Marco.
You're like, we follow each other, right? Like, you know, you should know who I am a little bit.
I also look nothing like Marco Rubio. Like, if you even put up like a little bit of scrutiny on that, like, Marco's a handsome man, and I'm not blessed. Like, so, my avatar's up there. Like, it's cool. Like, I understand.
Well, you look like you could eat Marco Rubio. You're about twice his size, for one thing.
Yeah, I'm a large man. Yeah. Very, very large, broad man. Yeah. Marco's very small.
Yeah, definitely. He may not have the small hands like Trump, but he's definitely a small man, so. All right, well, Mal, I was really excited to get you on the show this week, because I want to just talk a whole bunch of prospects with you.
Excellent. Hey, I'm down for that.
So I want to start in the national system. We'll talk, then jump into the Orioles a little bit. And if we can get into the draft a little bit, we'll get there as well. But I'm kind of just want to throw open the microphone and talk to you prospects for a little bit and see where it goes. So if we're going to start with the Nationals prospects, we got to start with Giolito, right? I mean, I think that's probably the place to start right now. And I think everybody's heard me talk enough about Giolito, but I just kind of your thoughts on Giolito, and really where I want to go is kind of, when are we going to see him in Washington?
Well, everything that I've seen and read about Giolito makes me excited to see this guy finally put on a big league uniform, which should happen sometime in 2016. Like, he's pretty far advanced, and he's going to get a pretty aggressive assignment here in 2016. Big fastball, huge curveball. We all know what the tools are. Like, we know what the stuff is, and he's really been harnessing his command. you know, Witt has repeatedly said that this is a guy who really understands pitching and really understands the finer points of working backwards and, you know, throwing ball to strike and strike to ball and really working with all of his offerings. So it's like, you know, it's here. Like, he's starting to actualize all of his pitches. And, you know, when it comes to pitching, raw pitch grades aren't everything. But for him, starting to gain some of that pitchability and really having a higher understanding of, you know, how to work counts, you know, from a pitcher standpoint. Like, that's starting to get me excited, and it's something that, like, you know, when you get thrown into the major leagues, like, that's the final test, and that's the final learning curve. But, you know, I think this is a guy who's ready to take on that challenge, and I think, you know, it's going to be tricky for the Nationals to try to find a spot for him early, because they have openings, but they kind of don't have openings.
Right.
So it's like, you know, I think it happens this year, and I think it's going to be very exciting. It's just going to be interesting to see how it happens.
When are you, if you could give me a prediction, when do you think he's up in Washington, maybe quote-unquote for good?
I think it's this year. I think that whenever he gets the call-up to be in the Nationals rotation, you know, he might get sent down like maybe once this year. But right. I think that, you know, when he comes up this year and he starts making consecutive starts, that's going to be it. So I would predict, you know, probably after July of 2016, that's when he's up for good. Like, he might make a spot start here and there,
right?
Before then, but I think he's up for good in the later half of this year.
And I think we're assuming he starts at AA and probably never sees AAA. Probably just jumps right over it.
Yeah, I don't think he needs to. You know, like I think that you know, with pitchers specifically, like, you don't really need to see that AAA level per se. Like, I know certain teams like the Rays like to do it. But I don't think this is an arm that you really need to burn some innings at AAA.
Yeah, that, I agree with you. Next guy I got to ask you about is probably the guy I get asked about more than any other prospect, and that's Victor Robles right now.
Oh, yeah, that boy hopped on the scene quick.
I mean, I literally got more questions about him than any other player this winter. What are you hearing on Robles? Because it sounds like it's, you know, near prospect porn when I listen to people talk about Robles.
Well, the thing with Robles is that, like, you got to remember he's 18 and doing all this stuff.
Right.
He's young, but he's got just all sorts of premium upside. With, you know, he runs fast and he runs quick and he plays a great center field. So already you're starting with a pretty solid baseline for when you're talking about a prospect, because he's got up the middle value, and, you know, that's what you're really looking for when you're coming, when you're trying to evaluate talent. And then you kind of mix in, you know, what, 70 run, 70 arm, the 60 potential hit. That's a dude. Like, it's an high extreme risk dude because he's 18 and,
right,
and everything is just more projection than anything. But, I mean, when you look at, he's tooled up to hell and he's got the potential to be a plus hit guy. That's just silly upside. You know what I mean?
I mean, when I tell people that there probably aren't three prospects in the minors that have the kind of tools he has, I mean, we're talking Buxton type tools. I mean, it's out of control what he could be. Could is the big word, but.
Right, right. I mean, let me just ask you this. If you had a center fielder hitting .280 with 15 home runs, who could steal you 40 bases and play, you know, plus center field, you'd be pretty happy with that. That's a guy who's going to get to a couple All-Star games, right?
I mean, shoot, that's A.J. Pollock light. I mean, that's a 6-win player, yeah.
Yeah, it's really good. Like, it's just when you start thinking about where this kid can end up, you know, in a couple of years, and, you know, when he turns 19, when he turns 20, and how those tools actualize. You know, he can get average power, and you mix that in with everything else. Like, it's an all-around profile that he can contribute in all sorts of different ways. And really, he just super blew up this year. I remember getting questions about him in midseason, and I was starting to ask Tuck and Witt about him. Tuck, rest in peace.
R.I.P.
And I started getting silly reports on this kid, and it turns out, man, that stuff is real. Like, real, real. And it's exciting.
So are we assuming he starts at low A to begin the year?
I would guess Hagerstown. Yeah, I would go with that, because I mean, he's so young, right? Like, he's an exciting profile, but it's a very young profile, so we gotta figure out where he fits.
But they're not gonna start him at short. I mean he's got to jump over short. I guess he touched short season a little bit last year. I would think that the full season would be the right move for him.
Yeah, I guess I could see full season for him. But
do you see him as a fast mover, or do you see somebody that's gonna need to go pretty much level to level?
I would slow burn him, you know, for the first couple of years. Because, I mean, there's no rush. Like, he's 18. You know, we'll see what he does this year. And if he, you know, hits 400, which I doubt. But,
right,
you know, if he puts up a crazy season, then you can start talking about maybe accelerating his timetable. But, you know, for now, just slow burn him. Let him, you know, learn sequencing, kind of what the opposite of what just let him run into someone who can like really sequence and let him learn pitching, let him learn hitting. So, I take it slow with that guy.
Yeah, I'm not sure there's a prospect I'm more looking forward to watching this summer than Robles in Hagerstown every day. So
let me ask you this question from a Nationals perspective. From, let's say, let's say from Ryan Zimmerman to Bryce Harper, how excited are you about Robles?
Wow, that's a tough question on the scale. Much closer to Bryce Harper than Zimmerman.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, really, I'm excited to see what this guy is. And some of it's just I haven't seen him in person. I've watched so much tape, you know,
right.
So much video and heard so much from people that I want to see if it's real. I mean, it almost just feels like, you know, the Loch Ness Monster or something at this point. Like, is this actually a legitimate guy?
Right, so, right.
But, yeah, I mean, I can't. I mean, I plan on sitting in Hagerstown for about the first 2 months of the year just watching this kid. Plus, that team's going to have a ton of talent. I mean, they got Stevenson in the outfield, Wiseman, and Fetty might start there. I mean, this really could be a loaded roster. Jackson Reed should start there as well.
Yeah, it's going to be a fun roster, and I think you're I remember the hype around Zimmerman. I was in Washington D.C. at the time for that.
Right,
and
I
think I would probably place myself a little bit closer to Zimmerman only because the Harper hype was just so out of control. Like, you know, we were talking about this kid being, you know, the best number one pick overall ever and, you know, kind of comping him to Babe Ruth when he was like 17 or something. You know, he was on the cover of Sports Illustrated when he was
and some of it's,
a teenager.
They're just so different in terms of, I mean, Zimmerman was just so polished and he was expected to be just, you know, kind of step in and be this solid, very good player. And he's probably been more than that at times. But
yeah,
the hype with, I would probably lean the hype as closer to Harper in some ways. It's out of control here.
Yeah, it's in prospect circles, it's extreme. Like, you know, when you talk about Robles, you know, scouts get excited, and guys who write about the sport get really, really excited when it comes to Robles. So it's like, I see your point there. It's funny to think about because, like, Ryan Zimmerman had a real good career. You know what I mean? And if Robles is Ryan Zimmerman in center field, that's a hell of a player.
Yeah, I mean, I think we overlook how good Zimmerman's been because of the injuries, but he's been a terrific player, particularly when he's on the field.
Yeah, I mean, watching it at the end always makes it harder to remember, but
yeah.
It was sweet.
So what are your thoughts on the top middle infielders in the system, Trey Turner and Defoe?
Well, I think Defoe is a little bit more of a role player, so I think he kind of fits in a utility role more so than Trey Turner, who I think can be a starter on a first division team. Like, I think when you're talking about Turner, we tend to focus on the things that he can't do instead of focusing on the things that he can do sometimes, you know, especially since we saw him at the major league level. I can't remember. Did he get at-bats?
Yeah, he got a few.
I think he got at-bats.
I mean, he was up, but he would get a few at-bats. He mostly sat, but he got, you know, a handful of games and at-bats.
Right. I think that when you look at the middle infield situation in Washington right now, I mean, do you see Danny Espinosa holding on to that job long term?
No.
No. So no. I think that, you know, Trey Turner is going to get his shot, and I think he's going to do well in that role. And I think he's got the type of skill set that you start to appreciate when you kind of have that everyday stability at short. You know, he's a good shortstop, and he's going to be able to field the position well enough to start every day. And he can hit, and he's got premium speed. So I'm not the biggest fan of speed first guys, but he's got enough power to not get the bat knocked out of his hand. You know what I mean? So I think that, you know, with Trey Turner, you know, that's just going to be a solid everyday starter for, you know, someone for a first division team. Whereas Defoe, I think he kind of fits into more of that super utility mold. He can kind of do everything, but not do everything well. So I think he just kind of plays all over the diamond and gets spot starts like that.
So you think Defoe is more of a, and I hate to, we only have a couple of the comps, but Tony Phillips, Ben Zobrist type, plays a little bit second base, short, third, outfield kind of guy?
Yeah, I think defensively that's it.
I hate putting a comp, but we only have a couple of really valuable utility guys that we can use as comparisons. So it's
yeah. In Chicago, Baez gets a Zobrist comp a lot, and it's not great. But I understand what people are saying now.
Right.
Whereas before, like I think I would have gotten upset at that because I think the thing with Zobrist is that you have to remember that guy had six makeup and six feel. Like he just had great
right.
feel for baseball. Whereas you know with Baez and Defoe, like the feel. Like, maybe they have average feel, but it's not plus. You know what I mean? It's not – we don't know what the makeup is yet. So, but I understand what you're saying. I don't mean to kind of squash the comp there. I just I always feel compelled to remind people that Zobrist is a lot more than just kind of play everywhere, which
well,
you know.
And I threw a Tony Phillips comp on Defoe a few weeks ago, and then I looked up his career, and I was like, okay, he's not going to have 60 WAR for his career. Sorry. I'm like, no.
And Phillips was a lot of fun to watch here in Chicago for the White Sox, man. I love that guy. That was one of my favorite players.
And he was so valuable on those Oakland teams with McGuire and stuff, and he would play a little bit here, a little bit there, second base, left field. I mean, he was a great player.
He was. I mean, he derailed himself with some of the off-the-field issues, man, but I loved watching Tony Phillips play. That was one of my favorite guys.
Yeah, he was – God, imagine how much money he would make today in today's game. Wow.
Oh, my God. What does Zobrist get? What did he get? 140? Something?
He got crazy money. I forgot what it was. But, you know, imagine what he would – I mean, jeez. So.
Yeah, I mean, he'd get insane money, man.
Who else in the national system are you intrigued by? Are you an A.J. Cole guy? Do you like Voth, Fetty, Stevenson?
I like Fetty. I'm not a big A.J. Cole guy. Yeah, I hate to trash prospects, but I haven't been overly impressed with the kind of stuff he's been presenting. But with Fetty, you got plus fastball, a solid average slider, and an average changeup. I mean, that's a good template to start adding pitches onto it. You know, maybe he can add a fourth pitch, and that kind of expands profile for him a little bit. And he pairs it with command that can probably maybe even get to plus, maybe. So I think, you know, this is a projectable guy. This is a guy who can, you know, really handle a starter's workload. You know, when he starts adding strength and all that stuff, like you're probably going to get a lot more excited. And, you know, he can be a very solid mid rotation to back rotation guy. So, you know, maybe a 3-4, you know, probably right, leaning a little bit more to the 4 than the 3. But, yeah, I mean, that's an arm that I like a lot. We didn't even talk about your boy Reynaldo.
Oh, yeah. We haven't even God, Witt's going to beat me up the next time I see him. We're not talking about Reynaldo.
Witt will definitely kill you. No. I think there's a lot of divisive opinions out in Reynaldo right now.
Where are you, pro Reynaldo or anti Reynaldo?
I'm pro, just because I like dreaming. So right, you know, anytime you're throwing near 100, like I'm going to be with it to a certain extent. And then when you start pairing it with a curveball that flashes, like that's cool. Like this isn't, do you know, this isn't like a Yandel Gustave who's throwing like 100 and it's all straight. You know, this is a guy who can, like, command his stuff, average, and, you know, he's got a good fastball and he's got a good curveball, so.
He's just really raw. I mean,
oh, yeah.
I mean, even inning to inning, he can lose his arm slot and it'd be a completely different pitcher. But, man, Witt and I were sitting there at, I believe it was Frederick, just watching Reynaldo, and it was good Reynaldo. And he was 97 to 99, just hammering guys with the curve, and he went 5 innings and nobody hit the ball to the infield. It was incredible.
Yeah, that's always cool, right? Like when you see that guy, he's throwing 95 to 97, which is destroying.
And then 2 weeks later, we see him and he's 93 to 95, can't hit the zone, and his slider or you know the breaking pitch is you know a 56-footer in the dirt. I mean, it was like, how is this the same guy? But he's so raw and he's so young, you know.
But that's why the volatility is what it is. You know what I mean? This is a higher risk than usual 22-year-old, just because the mechanics are such that you can really start to kind of fall into that reliever box. And I think I try not to throw everyone into that like little reliever designation because it's just like I like projecting, right? And I like seeing how guys are able to figure stuff out. But if this is a guy that you want to throw a reliever tag on, I think he could be a real good one at the very least. So,
yeah, I mean, I'm convinced he's a major league arm, but the variance in what his arm could be is pretty extreme. I mean, if things do come together, he could be a 2 or a 3, but he also could be an eighth inning reliever.
Right. And that, I mean, you know, again, that's why, you know, the risk factor that we associate with him is high, even though he's 22. So, I mean, it's really rare to see that kind of risk profile in with someone who can be as good as Reynaldo Lopez is and is also as old as Reynaldo Lopez is. So, that's
very true.
Dude, I love that arm, though. I want it to happen. I want it to happen so much.
I agree. Do you have a sleeper in the system before we jump off the Nats?
You know, people keep asking me about the sleeper in the Nats system. You know, I said Fetty, but now that we kind of put him at 77, he doesn't really count, does he?
Yeah, that's a little high for a sleeper.
I guess we can't do Fetty. So I guess the guy that I really like in their system, Stevenson, he can be an average regular, I think. I think Andrew Stevenson is a guy that you really want to start paying attention to a little bit. I also like Spencer Kaiboom a little bit. I think he can hit. So
the defense, he is so fun to watch behind the plate. He's so quiet. Yeah.
Right. So I think that when you put that defense together and I mean his brother is a better hitter than Spencer is, but
sure.
You know, if he can hit even a little bit, I think that's a guy who can kinda go on up. So yeah.
Very cool. Let's travel up 95, I guess, a little bit. I want to talk a little bit about the Orioles system. I see a ton of them as well.
That's sad. I'm sad.
Yeah, Frederick, Bowie, and Delmarva. I see a lot of games of theirs. So I ranked, when I did my rankings, I put Jomar Reyes at the top of their system. Some of it was just an indictment on where Bundy and Harvey's health is, but I think I'm the high man on Jomar. I mean, I think he is an absolute dude and a half.
He's a real dude. The only thing that you really have to worry about with Jomar Reyes is that he's probably going to end up at first base. But,
correct.
You know, that's a bat that can play at first. Yeah, it's really – I was doing some of this research the other day. I mean, if you ever looked it up, the guys who play first base and hit 15 home runs with a .270 average is a lot of dudes. So you have to do some extra work to kind of separate yourself out from that pack, and I think Jomar Reyes does. So, you know, I don't think this is going to be like a crazy high-octane prospect or anything, but I think he can be, you know, an average, a solid average first baseman, which, you know, great arm at first base kind of gets wasted, but that's a guy who can hit. He can just hit.
Any chance he's a 6'6 hitter in the future?
The hit is kind of what I can't get with 6 hit. I can get with 5 hit. I can get with 5 solid average hit maybe, but I can't get with 6 hit. But hey, that power is real.
That power is legit. If he's a 5'6 hitter, that's a very good player.
Oh yeah. Yeah, I mean, you're talking about 25 bombs with like a, what, you know, 250, 260 average. That's cool. I'll take that.
Yeah, particularly while he's cheap. I would take that.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I still think if he decides he wants to hit for average, I think he can do it. I do. I loved the kid. I mean, I just watched him so much this year, and, you know, he was hurt and everything else. He was really young. But, man, that swing is just pure for 18, and the balance is out of control.
It's a short swing, right? Like, it's real short and compact, like, to the ball. But I just think there's some natural swing and miss in there.
Correct. I 1,000% agree with you. I've just the balance for a 6 – I mean, he looks like J.J. Watt. He's about 6'6", 270. I mean, that's who I comp him to. He's enormous, but the balance is extraordinary. He looks like a ballet dancer swinging through the bat, swinging through the bone. He's just – I'm convinced. I love the bat, so.
Yeah, if that bat gets to 6-0, I mean, you might be starting talking about 7 power, honestly.
Yeah, because then it starts in-game playing and everything else, too. That's a great point.
Yeah. But no, I would settle Jomar in comfortably into, like, the 5-6 range. But yeah, I mean, Tuck has raved about him quite a bit and kind of convinced us to kind of push him up a little bit before he died. So,
yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Where are you with the injured guys with Bundy and Harvey?
Look, Bundy is a non-entity for me until he gets to the majors. So, you know, I've really loved Bundy throughout his entire career. You know, I was very excited about him. He's the guy who threw up 27 scoreless innings to start his career, right? Or something. It was something outrageous like that.
It was 50 strikeouts to 5 walks at Delmarva. I mean, that was insane.
Yeah, it was. I mean, he was just insane to start his career, and I was in love with the profile. But man, he keeps getting hurt. So, like, I don't, like, how am I supposed to trust that arm? You know what I mean? Like, what am I supposed to do with Dylan Bundy at this point? He's probably going to be a reliever at the major league level. When's he going to get time to stretch out and come back to be a starter?
Yeah, Harvey, I got a little more hope for him. At least he's still got minor league options and still has a chance to develop.
Yeah, I think Harvey's ahead of Bundy for sure. And I think you can – I mean, we make the argument that Harvey's ahead of Jomar Reyes just on the pure stuff because the curveball is just nice.
It's still
a nice curveball.
And the changeup's there too. I mean, he can throw a good changeup when he wants to.
Yeah, I mean, Witt keeps making the point that he thought Harvey had better stuff than Bundy, which, I mean, you can make that argument, I think.
There was a start with Giolito and Harvey at Delmarva where Harvey looked every bit the same as Giolito. I mean, you didn't see the jersey or whatever, you would have been like, wow, either one of these guys is a top pitching prospect in baseball.
Right. So, I mean, you're kind of hoping that the Orioles I don't know how to say that. Well, you're kind of hoping that the Orioles can just kind of harness that stuff, right? And you know, keep them healthy long enough to where they can take advantage of it. Because, I mean, none of their high prospect arms have really made it. Like, you talk about Gossman, he flamed out. I mean, he hasn't flamed out, but he hasn't lived up to the expectations, and now he's a reliever. Arrieta got traded to the Cubs and became Cy Young. So,
right. Even Tillman probably hasn't hit his ceiling, truthfully, where he was as a prospect. And he's been a pretty good pitcher, frankly, but...
Right, pretty good, but, like, you know, he hasn't come close to what he could have been. So I don't know, man. I almost want to see Hunter Harvey get traded, and then hopefully something happens. But
all right. Here's the time of the podcast where Witt's going to make fun of me, but I'm still believing that Chancisco might be able to catch.
He's weird, man. Like, I saw him in the AFL.
He should be so much better than he is behind the plate. It makes no sense to me.
He's got, like, real athleticism. He's got feel for the barrel. Like, it, you know, it's nice left-handed swing, so, like, I'm already excited. And then I saw him catch, and I'm like, I just – where? What are you going to do? You know, what do you –
And all the pieces are there. I mean, he's a good athlete. He played shortstop in high school. You would think with the experience he's had now, you would think he'd be agile back there. He's stiff as a board behind the plate. His hands are not very good for a shortstop.
Well, he doesn't anticipate well, right? Like, you know, when it starts like kind of diving into the dirt, that's when you really got to start moving. But I just don't think he really anticipates the pitch well behind there for whatever reason.
And he hasn't made the – I expected that the first year or even the second year. But now we're talking 3 or 4 years into catching. I want to believe, but he hadn't made the progress.
It's got to happen. Like, it's got to happen now. And it hasn't happened yet. So I don't – I don't know, man.
Because, like, his profile is totally different. If he's a catcher, even passable, he might be a first division catcher.
I agree, like 1,000%. Like, he's – but it's just like projecting that guy to like really figure it out behind the plate at this point. Like, he is 21, so there's some room for it to get a little bit better. But to the point where like he harnesses all of his athleticism back there, it's just real hard. I mean, catching – I think people – I've been guilty of this as well – really underrate how difficult it is to learn how to catch, especially, you know, given the rise of framing now, where like teams like the White Sox seem to think that they can teach framing. And, I mean, we'll see how that works for them. But – like, it's really hard to set a quiet target, stay still, and stick back there, you know, because your body goes through a lot of stuff, and you got to study. There's a lot of mental workload placed on you. You got to study the hitters, you got to study the pitchers, you got to study everything. Like, you're doing double the work. You're basically a pitcher and a hitter, and you're trying to produce offensively and, you know, be there defensively.
And so by July, like, you're completely gassed.
You're dead, which makes the Buster Posey career arc just so insane. Fascinating. Yeah, so fascinating. Because he's – like, it's not just that he was a catcher, a great catcher with power. Like, he was a great catcher who could hit with power at AT&T in the AL – or in the NL West.
And he was a shortstop as a freshman in college. He was an All-American. Then they shifted him behind the plate. And now he's the best catcher in baseball. I mean
– that's just elite feel for baseball right there. Just elite feel. Just great. Baseball player. I love Buster Posey.
Yeah, I mean, he really is. I don't talk about him enough because he's on the West Coast, but he is really one of the best players in this game.
Yeah, I mean, in all likelihood, we're watching a Hall of Famer.
Yeah, so 1,000%.
Yeah.
Anybody else in the Baltimore system we should talk about? Are you a David Hess guy at all, or?
You know, not so much on Hess. I think Michael Gibbons is going to come up and be a reliever and be a pretty good one.
I like Gibbons a lot. I mean, he's a reliever, but I think he's a very, maybe a top 10 to 15 type reliever in baseball. I mean, I think he's outstanding as a reliever.
Right. I kind of can't believe Christian Walker is still a prospect. I really thought he wasn't.
I agree.
I thought he had already used up all of his eligibility.
Truth is, I probably like Mancini more than I like Walker, and I'm not sure I like either of them.
I'm not a big Mancini guy, but hey, you know, Walker's basically there already.
Yeah.
So, he'll come up and, you know, be whatever he is. Outside of that, man, it's kind of a sad system.
Who's your sleeper in the system if there is one?
I don't think there is one, although I kind of liked what I read about Lázaro Leyva a little bit.
Yeah, he's good. I'm a Jonah Heim guy, the catcher. I like him a bunch.
Well, he can catch.
He really can flat out catch, and I think someday he might hit enough to be a passable hitter enough, so to speak.
Right.
I mean, that bar is pretty darn low these days if you can hit at all. If you can hit 240, you can find a job.
Yeah, I mean, 240 even with like a little bit of power.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't take much.
Right. And I mean, the threshold, you know, not a lot of guys even get to the point where they can hit 10 home runs, right? Like, it's just... It's just 12 home runs, like post up average power. So it's like, you know, the threshold for offense and catcher is just not great. I don't think anybody hit outside of Buster Posey above 280.
Yeah, I mean, Luke Roy was hurt last year, so he didn't do it. I mean, it's like you say, we're definitely at a down point with catchers right now, and some of it's probably the focus on, you know, framing and defensive metrics, but there aren't a lot of good hitters right now at all.
No, not a lot of good hitters. And I think, you know, when you're starting to see guys like Rene Rivera. Okay, sorry. Here, I have it. So four catchers last year hit above 280. And it was Cervelli, Pierzynski, Hundley, and Posey.
Yeah, and Hundley gets a little bit of the boost from Colorado for sure, and Pierzynski came out of nowhere. So, yeah, I mean,
pretty amazing. Pierzynski's always had contact skills.
Right.
But, like, you know, like it's low. It's really low.
That's crazy. Yeah. All right, before we get out of here, I do want to just talk to you a little bit MLB draft before we get out of here.
Sure.
I think you're doing a little bit more on the high school side than the college side, but in general, it feels like this crop is maybe the best since 2011.
Yeah, I mean, we're talking about two high-octane arms up at the top with Riley Pint and Justin Groom, right, like out of high school, like when we're kind of talking about the top five picks. I think those are the first two names that people think about. Certainly Buddy Reed out of Florida has gotten a lot of consideration, you know, in recent days. Like, it's the swing needs a little bit of work. I mean, everybody's swing coming out of amateur needs a little bit of work. But, you know, he's a guy who can – you know, flash you all the tools and kind of show enough hit to be playable. So it's like, you know, if you can hit enough, there's enough stuff there for him to be a top five pick in the draft. But kind of going back to Pint, you know, that's a guy that when I saw him at the end of the circuit last year, he was just kind of all over the place and overthrowing, and it looked really ugly. And his stuff wasn't as crisp as the reports from earlier in the season were showing. Well, now this year, like, he's just kind of lighting the world on fire with, you know, a freaking slider that's showing up and a changeup that's showing up, and he's throwing 101. That's pretty good, you know what I mean? So we'll see what happens with his stock as kind of the draft season gets a little bit closer. And then you got Groom, you know, who I think
– Groom's awesome. I mean, he's everything you want in a high school pitcher. Wow.
Just left-handed, first off. Like, already we're starting off good. Great breaking ball, good velocity, just – mechanics look good. Like, he looks good.
Prototypical, you know what I
mean? Body. Just great starters.
With room to add 25 pounds as he matures.
Absolutely. I mean, so I'm like, I think right now I still have room above Pint, but Pint is really starting to make a case again. Whereas, like, last year I wasn't so sure on it because it looked ugly. Like, it started looking ugly. He's got it under control a little bit, so it seems.
I started worrying we were going to see a little Tyler Kolek and Riley Pint last year.
Different body, but same issues, right? Like, I think raw, we'll see what happens when we get closer to draft time, because, you know, hard-throwing right-handers from out of high school typically start getting dropped down. Like, think about it. Who's the last high school right-hander who got picked 1-1?
There's got to be somebody since Beckett, but Beckett's the first one that jumps out to me. It's been forever.
It's been a long, long time. You know what I mean? So it's like, you know, once we start getting closer to draft time, you know, certain scouting directors and cross-checkers will get in. They've been burned by the high school right-hander before, so, you know, we'll start to get a little bit of a different stock, I think, on Riley Pint. But, man, if he keeps shoving like this, I don't know. Like, he's definitely top five and definitely top two. Probably has a 1-1 case to be made, you know.
Have you gotten to see much of Corey Ray out at Louisville?
I haven't, but Nick has, old Flo down there. Corey Ray's just cool.
Right. Like, yeah, I mean, I love his game.
Like, he's just a cool dude, you know what I mean? Like, that guy can just fucking get it out there in the outfield, and you can hit well. Big Corey Ray fan.
Yeah, I don't know how high his ceiling is, but I love the floor.
Yeah, the floor will get you drafted and dressed like this. It's like, I think that a lot of the times we can fall in love with the projection, and I'm certainly guilty of that. I fall in love with projection all the time. But you have to keep in mind that organizations favor risk profiles as well. So, you know, where the likelihood of what your contribution level is going to be factors heavily into what your draft stock is going to look like. So when we're talking about Corey Ray, like, yeah, it's not this crazy high upside player, but the base is really attractive too.
Yeah.
So I don't think we can lose track of that.
It reminds me a little bit of Steve Finley without the power spike at the end of his career.
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah, okay. All right.
So, have you seen any of the couple of high school outfielders out in California, Blake Rutherford or Avery Tock?
I haven't seen either, but I've gotten some reports on Rutherford. I got some video on Rutherford the other day that someone sent me. You know, it's an interesting swing. He's going to be a little old at draft time. I think he's going to be 19.2 or something like that, like 19 and 2 months or whatever. You know, it's certainly an interesting profile, but I think I'm a little lower on him than I think most people are. So we'll see what he puts together, kind of going through the season.
Yeah, I'm worried about his defensive profile. I mean, I'm not. I think he's going to hit, and I love the bat. But if he's a left fielder, you know, you got to hit a lot. I mean, that's a tough profile.
Yeah, think about it. Like 19 at the draft, time of the draft, with the left field profile. Like, you know, what kind of bat does he really have? You know.
Yeah, I mean, you've got to be an impact player in left field. You've got to be at least 25 bombs.
Right, and he's got all sorts of, you know, he's got those two red flags going against him right now. So, you know, there's all sorts of certainty that he, or there's all sorts of possibility that he can, you know, overcome those red flags. But, you know, for me, it's just, yeah, you know, I like a different profile coming out of high school, and it's not one that I'm in love with.
Yeah, he might, you know, it's like if he turns out, he becomes Colby Rasmus, which is a good player, but it's not somebody that you want to take in the top five picks.
Right, especially not. Not with that age, not right. In left field.
Yeah, you know, certainly when you're talking about some of the other guys with some upside.
Right.
Any other names you like in the draft? Are you an Eric Lauer guy from Kent State or Mike Schauerin at Maryland? Any in the kind of the college pitchers?
I like Schauerin a little bit, but most of the guys that I like are in high school because that's usually what I'm seeing. Cooper Johnson is the elite defensive catcher in this draft right now. And, you know, I'm going to go check him out. He plays up in Mundelein, which is pretty close to me. So the main thing with him, though, is that his batting practice swing is completely different than his in-game swing, which is it's not a great thing.
It's not unusual at that age, but it's not a good thing either.
Right. Because, you know, every time I see him in batting practice, it's like, oh, my God. and he's that at catcher? Like, I'm great. That's great. I'm all the way in.
Yeah, first round pick. Here we go. Sign me up. Yeah.
Right, and then you see him in game, and it's like, oh, okay, all right, well, you got some work to do here.
Right.
So
now I remember that you're 17, right?
Like, exactly. Yeah. I mean, he's really young. He added some good thickness last year, from last year to this year. So, you know, I think his body's going to be up for catching. He's just tremendous back there with elite arm. Real quiet receiver as well. I think it might be 6'7". In terms of I think it might get there. But we got to see about the hit, man.
Yeah,
we got to see about the hit. So, I mean, that's the guy that I'm tracking most closely. Then you got Gavin Lux up in Wisconsin.
Yeah, that's a good name.
That's a guy that you know, he's just all quick hands. You know, just real quick hands in the receiving, real quick transfers. He just looked like a professional player when I saw him at the Super 60. Quick bat. We'll see. You know, he's hitterish. He's more of a hitter than I think he is a fielder because his lateral range isn't great.
Right.
I like that guy.
I'm a big fan of, and I never get his name right, Face, the catcher at UVA. That's my guy year. I really like him, and he's starting to get some healing him now, but that's my guy. I mean, if you've got a late, you know, late first-round pick, that guy's a dude.
Yeah, absolutely.
Reminds me a ton of the old Detroit catcher, Matt Noakes. You may remember him from that
area. Oh, my God. He was a White Sox for a second, right?
Yeah, but he played for the Tigers. I remember him from the Tigers, but just a very simple left-handed swing, good defensive catcher, not a superstar, but a very solid player.
Yeah, it's like kind of the Damian Miller starter set, right? Except, you know, Miller was right-handed, I think.
Right. Todd Hundley, another kind of similar comp as well, just a very solid baseball player.
Yeah, Hundley, unfortunate career.
Yeah, very true. Very, very true. I sat on Schwarren on Friday, actually.
How was that?
He was not great. They were playing a High Point. He completely lost his release point in the fourth inning. But for the first three innings, he was dominant. I mean, he was 89 to 92, locating in the zone, you know, up and down, left and right. You know, I mean, slider was really good. You know, I mean, I you know, it's tough to say because he went 3 2/3 innings against High Point, so it's hard to be really super bullish on a guy when he loses release point. But, you know, he's probably a 5 fastball, 55 slider, maybe 45-50 changeup. I mean, he's a 4-5 back end starter.
I mean, hell, if it gets there, yeah, that's pretty solid back there. That's the thing with amateur though, is that you really got to maximize the hell out of your looks, dude. Because it's like, if your guy doesn't go, like you're toast. Because you wasted your game. Because that's it. There's no one else on that team.
Although the guy at Maryland who I'm higher on is the shortstop Kevin Smith, who's a sophomore. I think he could be maybe even a first round pick next year. He reminds me of Trey Turner without the speed. Just does everything well.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely.
So, any other names that we should talk about? Any other guys that you like in this draft?
trying to go off the top of my head. I mean, those are the guys that I've been tracking a lot this year. So I think we covered most of them.
Yeah.
There's a couple of other ones, but I got to do some more background work on them.
I am pretty excited for this crop, though. I mean, it feels like it's been a few years since you have some high school prospects. You got some college guys. You got some arms. You got some bats. I mean, it feels like, you know, it's pretty deep and there's some talent.
Let me tell you, it really shows up in low A because those guys are missing.
Yeah.
You can really tell the light drafts from the past couple of years have really affected low A baseball.
Particularly with bats. I agree with you. There's just not much there right now.
No, there's not a plus player in low A right now, I don't think. So it's at least in the Midwest League. So it's tough, man. It's tough out here.
So when do you get going scouting? I guess Thursday the 7th you get going?
I get started on evaluation. It's an old Mort thing, right? You know, scouting's when you work for a team. I get started on evaluation on April 7th if it doesn't snow, which is kind of pissing me off because it's 63 and sunny right now. Right. And the sun is shining in my apartment. I feel real good because it's going to be baseball on later. And then I was looking at the forecast, and Thursday it's going to be light showers, and then Friday it's going to snow.
Nice.
Which is great. That's what I like.
Yeah, so snow out the first weekend of the year. That's always great. Thanks a lot, guys.
Nothing sums up the Midwest League quite like snow out in the middle of the first game of the year.
That really does. I mean, yeah. God, that first month of the year there is not fun. April in that league is not fun. Either for the guys evaluating or for the players.
No, man. I saw Alex Jackson, and this kid, I mean, you know, probably has never played below 60 degrees in his life.
Yeah.
Playing a night game in 35 degree weather, and he just looked cold.
He's just like, what am I doing here? I mean, the money is great, but I should be in California hitting balls, man. What am I doing?
It's like, yeah, you're trading off being near Chicago for 35 degree weather. And let me tell you, man, even 45 degrees at night in Kane County feels completely different than 45 degrees anywhere else because that wind will kill you.
It's brutal.
It's very bad.
The thing about, you know, April and May baseball, particularly with where you are, is it can be nice at first pitch, and then all of a sudden the sixth inning hits and you're freezing.
You're toast.
Yeah,
it's over.
You need two different outfits to go to the games.
Yeah, you got your ninja outfit, right, for late night, and then you got kind of like your warmer gear for warm-ups.
Yeah, you got your wit shorts for the beginning of the game, and then all of a sudden you need your camo pants at the end of the game.
I feel like we have to mention Witt at least like six times in this podcast.
For sure. Well, he mentions my podcast every time on your show, so I love it.
There you go.
So, Mal, thank you so much for joining me this week. Probably a pretty good place to cut it here. I'd love to give you a spot where people can find you on Twitter, where they can find you now that you're not running for president.
You can find me on Twitter at MRubio52, where I'm followed by 12 Marco Rubio bots.
That's amazing.
I'm upset, but yeah, it is kind of funny.
And they can find you at 2080 Baseball, obviously, and all the other good stuff.
Yep. And we got some exciting stuff in the hopper coming up as well. I think people are going to really like what we're going to do coverage wise.
Well, I'm very excited to see what's coming, and I'm glad to see a nice strong competitor to some of the other, you know, the Fangraphs and the BPs that are out there. It's always good to see more good quality work going on. So
let me tell you, there's nothing I love more than competing. Yeah. Love competing. And, you know, I got some friends at BP and I really love competing with those guys because it's a lot of fun.
Yeah. And for the guys like me who are reading the work, it only makes the work better. And the guys out there evaluating stronger evaluators. So,
right. Exactly. Like I want to work. So
yes,
it's about that time.
Yeah, I'm so ready. I'm sure you're tapping your toe and itching to get to games too, man. It was the first one the other day, and I'm just like, I am so ready for baseball.
Absolutely. I can't wait.
So, well, thanks, Mal. I really appreciate you coming on opening day, and I hope to have you on sometime later in the season.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me on, man. I had a great time.
Thank you so much. And that was my conversation with Mauricio Rubio Jr. From 2080 Baseball. I want to thank him for joining me, and I want to thank him for sharing a few minutes of his time. Next, we are going to have our sponsor, one of the founders from No Halftime, Bruce Elliott, joining us on the show to talk a little bit about the product, No Halftime, the app, and our partnership for this season. So look forward to that real quickly after this quick little short break.
This is Donovan Dijak from Ring of Honor, and you are feasting your ears on the Nats GM Show.
now, I am proud to introduce one of the founders of No Halftime, our new sponsor for the show. I'm very proud of our new sponsor, and I'm happy to have Bruce Elliott on the phone. Bruce, welcome to the show.
Yeah, hey, thanks. Great to be here. Also great to be partnering up with you, buddy.
Yeah, we're very excited on this end as well for the new partnership, and we're very excited. So let's cut right to the chase. What is No Halftime for everybody that's hearing this?
What is No Halftime? Great question. So Ryan, No Halftime, it's an all-new fantasy sports app that allows users to create one-on-one matchups. So imagine that, you know, you think that player X will do better than player Y. Let's say, for example, maybe you're a huge Mike Trout fan. You could put him up against Harper, or you could put him up against Alex Rodriguez. You take your pick, and you take one side, another player takes the other side. You can create a private challenge, so you can send that challenge to buddies who may be in you may be in a baseball league with, or they may just enjoy baseball. Or you could make a challenge public, so you can pretty much put it out there for the world to accept and take the other side. So, you know, what we've created with No Halftime is kind of like the best of both worlds. It's very simple, very intuitive. The interface is very slick. We take great pride in making something that's very simple for users to use. And also, you know, you get to enjoy, you know, a little bit of fan sports and maybe even make some money if you can win. So it's a great new concept. You know, we've been around since October 19th, and you know, No Halftime is the new level, I would say, in terms of fantasy sports.
Well, the thing that I really like about the product is, particularly with baseball season coming up, is, you know, playing fantasy baseball every day or every week in head-to-head leagues, that's a grind. I mean, it's 26 weeks. It's 162 games. Yeah. But with this, you know, you're sitting around on a Sunday afternoon, you're watching some baseball, bam, there you go. You can start up a challenge, or if you want to do it for a week or a month or what have you, but you don't have the commitment of playing for the whole season.
Exactly. And you hit it right on the head. We wanted to create something that was very simple, very easy to manage. You can go in and you could create a fantasy challenge that you think that, you know, player X is going to have more fantasy baseball points than another player. And it's as simple as that. You know, another person will come in, they see the challenge and say, hey, look, I think that, you know, the player on the right is going to do better than player left. And there you go. That's a challenge. You know, if you create a one-on-one matchup, and then someone else, you know, goes head-to-head kind of against you. So it really makes fantasy sports a lot more enjoyable. You know, you don't have to worry about drafting a team or managing a salary cap. You know, it really kind of it adds to the fantasy season. You know, it really allows you a quick way to kind of get in there and get out.
Yeah, and you were saying to me off air, but it made perfect sense of, you know, this kind of started this idea with, you know, your buddies would be playing in a fantasy league, but then you'd want some side action with them, whether, you know, so forth. Yeah. Is that kind of how the whole idea or the concept started?
Yeah, no, that's really kind of the genesis of it. You know, we, for a long time, and I think a lot of guys and girls can relate to, when you're playing fantasy sports and you're in a league, whether it's football, baseball, or basketball, you take pride in the team that you draft or pick or select, and you think that your team is the best team. And, you know, we had some other guys, the other co-founders on the team, they obviously share the same belief that their team was better, that the players they picked or drafted were top-notch. And so, you know, me being me, I said, hey, look, I think my quarterback will do better than your quarterback this week. And boom, you know, that's kind of how, you know, kind of how we got to the point where we are now. We said, look, we think that there are other guys and girls who are out there who are doing the same exact thing. And hey, let's make it into an app that we think people will use.
Yeah, rather than just talking at the bar, now you actually can put up or shut up, literally. And
Exactly. One of the guys on the team, he's a huge LeBron fan, or LeBron stan, depending on how you look at it. And, you know, I like to challenge him you know, to different challenges. I'm a huge basketball and football guy. So, for example, I'll send him a challenge that I think that Steph Curry will do better than LeBron James. And, you know, him being him, he'll take that challenge. And so it's perfect because this is the app that you can put to your buddies, you can put to your friends, or you can put to the world a challenge and say, hey, look, I think this guy is better than this other guy. And there is someone in the world who will believe that that other guy would do better. So it's a great concept. It's a great app. And we're just happy that, you know, everyone is really, you know, really digging the concept. So,
well, and you've kind of alluded to it, but this isn't just a baseball or football app. You can play a lot of different sports on this.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Obviously, baseball is going to be one of our key sports coming up. But we also have basketball. We have football. We have golf. We're going to have tennis. We're going to have NASCAR. We're going to have a few other sports. We're considering MMA. And, so we believe that, you know, there's a whole world of fantasy sports that's really untapped. I think one of the reasons why, and you kind of alluded to it at the top of the show, that, hey, look, you know, people don't necessarily want to play fantasy basketball or baseball, you know, because of the grind of the season, and maybe they want something simpler, or maybe they just want to do something that's in conjunction with their season, you know, to kind of keep things fresh and keep things new. So no halftime, you know, you have a plethora of sports, you know, you can sit back if your team is eliminated after the first 15 weeks of playing, you're at the bottom of the league. You can just turn on no halftime, and boom, your season is new again.
Yeah, that to me is the absolute selling point of this, of the whole idea. Yeah. Is, you know, your team's out of it in week 9 of fantasy football. Well, all of a sudden, you can rally and you know, get your entry feedback, so to speak.
Exactly. We've definitely one of our buddies, he's been playing on the halftime and he loves it. He definitely, when he wins, I make sure I call him up and tell him that drinks are on him. So
very nice. All right, Bruce, before I let you go, sell us one last time on No Halftime, where they can find it online, where they can find it, how they can download it. Just sell us everything.
Yes. All right. So No Halftime is currently available in the iOS App Store. So you can go on, type in No Halftime, 2 words. It'll come right up for you. You can also go to the website, www.nohalftime.com. You can also, by April 4th, we'll have our Android version released. So we're pretty excited about that. You should be able to find it either in the Google Play Store, or you should find it right on the website, www.nohalftime.com. Also, if listeners want to follow us on Twitter and listen for any updates, they can follow us at nhalftime. Our handle again is nhalftime. They can follow us and get all the updates, and also our blog is at nohalftime.com too. So,
well, Bruce, I know the Nats GM show is really excited to be partnered up with you guys for the entire baseball season, and we're looking forward to better and bigger things for both of us.
Let's do it. We're looking forward to it.
All right, let's do it. Thank you again, Bruce Elliott from nohalftime.com.
Thank you.
And thank you to Bruce Elliott from NoHalftime.com, our new principal primary sponsor of the Nats GM show, for coming on and talking about their app. Couple quick things before we get out of here. If you would, please rate, review, and subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, if you might, as that helps us gather a larger audience, particularly when baseball fans type in baseball into their podcast search. So rate, review, and subscribe would really, really help us out if you could. Also, we are... That's it for episode 62 of the Nats GM Show. Thanks for listening. We'll be back next week. Bye for now.